FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it is September 27th, 2017. Well, you know, we don't just talk about money things here. We talk about societal issues. In fact, we just talk about whatever is interesting to me, and I'm pretty sure if it's interesting to me, it's going to be interesting to you. As always, emails are graciously welcomed. I am not too many far behind now. Email address kl@kerrylutz.com and the Twitter feeds @KerryLutz. So, hey, person you're about to hear from has been called the toughest cop to ever wear the shield in New York City, NYPD. That's saying something. His name is Ralph Friedman. Ralph, you had over 2,000 arrests, 100 off-duty arrests, which means you didn't have a lot of time to do much else. And the numbers go on and on. You wrote a book that is an excellent book called Street Warrior, and you're the NYPD's most decorated detective. And now that book, your life basically has become a show on Discovery Channel's Street Justice, The Bronx. And with that, welcome to the show. We're really thrilled to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, so you were a young cop. I guess you were a bit idealistic, and you just kind of took the department by storm. How did you do it?
You know, you don't know really what you're doing when you first get out there. You know, you get out of the academy and you have your training and you have some knowledge, but it doesn't really prepare you for what you're going to see on the streets, especially when you get sent to a high crime rate area. And I was sent out right away to the 41st Precinct, which is known as Fort Apache. And believe me, I was just put into another world, you know. And I actually ate it up, though. The excitement got a hold of me, and it gave me an adrenaline rush. And I enjoyed making collars. I enjoyed protecting the community and taking bad guys off the street. And it was a rush. Nice. You know, you start to really feel good about this. You know, as many bad guys as I've arrested and hurt or had to shoot in the line of duty, you know, all of these things, I was helping the community. You know, and it's a good feeling.
So,
you know, you're protecting people that can't fend for themselves, hardworking people that go out there and do the right thing and live in these communities that they can't really escape from due to financial reasons or whatever. And, you know, you're helping them. But the side I saw was the action side, and I ate it up. You know, besides helping people, you know, I was feeding this adrenaline addiction I had, and it was great. You know, I enjoyed it.
And you, more or less, the way you're depicted in the book and the movie, you really had like no fear of mortal harm or death or anything else. You were just single-mindedly out there to do the job, and that was it.
I enjoyed doing the job, and, you know, I guess there's you know, some excitement about putting your life on the line. You know, you're putting your skills and techniques against the criminals, and, you know, you always hope you come out on top, and luckily, most of the time, I did. I mean, I took my lumps also. You know, I've been injured in the line of duty several times. I've suffered broken hands 2-3 times. I fractured my skull twice. I can't tell you how many fingers and toes I broke, cuts from knives and razors. One last accident cost me 23 bones, a shattered hip. You know, you take your lumps and bumps, you know, that comes with the territory. I accepted all that. I didn't want to accept getting killed, so I tried to stay on top.
Right. So had you always wanted to be a cop when you were growing
up? I never thought of it. It never entered my mind. I had a few interactions with police. I was just an average kid growing up. You know, I was on the school baseball team for junior high. In high school, I played football for a league. I raced cars. I had a good job when I graduated. I was a moving man, and I was making big money back then. It was $4.50 an hour. The rest of the state was making $1.15. They had to work 40 hours to get overtime, and where I worked, as long as you worked over 8 hours in one day, you got overtime. I was doing very well, And I was out with a few friends on a Friday night. And I said, hey, what are you guys doing tomorrow? And they said, we're taking the police test. I said, what? You know, I never entered my mind, you know. So I said, you know, knock on my door. If I get up, I'll go with you. And I did wake up. And in those years, it wasn't a, you didn't have to file or pre-file, you know. It was a walk-in test. And it was being given in my high school. So I went over with them. I took the test. And once I took the test, I got a little excited about it because I said, you know, this might be a really good career move where I can, you know, move ahead without college because I was lifting, you know, I was bodybuilding and lifting weights and that was great. And then I go to work all day and lift refrigerators and stoves and that was great. But I just realized that in 20 years, I'll be lifting the same refrigerator and stove, you know, there's no advancement. You move furniture. So then I got excited about it. And, they called me about 9 months later, and I was a little too young, but they accepted me as a trainee. And I did 2 years indoors until I turned 21. And then I went through the police academy, got my firearms training, and we hit the streets. And in those years, you hit the streets. You didn't have training officers. No one held your hand. You went out there. You were, you know, given a post, and you just go out in the street, and that's it. That's where you really learn the job. But I had no family, no friends, no acquaintances that were police officers. You know, and I got brought in a couple of times for fights, and they let me go. It was not like today. These, you know, we fought with our hands. You know, and if someone got lumped up, you know, they bring you in, give you like a YD or JD card, and you're on your way. I got a couple of summons. And I didn't hold it against the police. They were doing their job. I didn't even think about police one way or the other. You know, they had their job to do. Once in a while, you know, I had an interaction, and I didn't even think about it after. I didn't say I hated the police because I got a summons. You know, it was just, hey, I was driving fast. I get a summons. You know, I didn't even think about it. You know, I was very young back then, and just didn't bother me. And, you know, I always saw the police as doing their jobs, you know.
Right. Yeah, well, everybody's got their job to do. So you were introduced to this whole new world, effectively, and you put your life on the line many a time. What was the best feeling you ever had after working a case? Does anything stick in your mind?
There was quite a few of them. You know, I had a very good career. I worked with great cops, had great partners, and we had a lot of good cases and a lot of action scenarios, and they all played out, you know, pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I was proud of a lot of them, you know. You know, a few times I had to use deadly physical force, and it resulted in saving my own life or my partner's life or a civilian's life. And that's a very good feeling, you know. I wasn't traumatized. You know, I did what I had to do. And if I could save my life or my partner's life or someone else's life, that's a great feeling.
Yeah, I imagine so. So you retired in the 80s, and finally you got your book out. And how did the book come to be?
Well, I always wanted to write a book, but it was on the back burner for quite a while. You know, a lot goes into a book, and it's a lot has to go into meeting the right person to write it with you, and also goes into who you meet to get it published or act as your agent and stuff. There's a lot of aspects of it, and I guess the timing was right. You know, it's a time when they're trying to make police look bad. I mean, I think most people appreciate the police, but there's always a small segment that's very loud, and they get more of the attention, more like the squeaky wheel gets the oil. You know, right. So you got a lot of people making a noise. And, you know, I wanted to show the police in a good light. You know, I feel that 99% of police officers are out there. You know, these men and women go out there. They're not getting any backing today. And they're still doing a terrific job. You know, they're the ones that separate, you know, anarchy and civil disobedience from law and order. Yeah. And you need people to do that, and they're not being appreciated, but yet they go out there and do it, and the people should be more than thankful. But the timing was right to put the story out there to show the police in a good light. I met the right people, and the book came out fantastic and is doing well.
Yeah.
It's called Street Warrior, and it's available on Amazon.com.
Yeah, and we'll have a link to it on the show notes to this interview. So, Ralph.
Thank you.
Hey, when you know, I think people think negatively of the police, but like you said, what is the alternative? Until you find something better than cops, and every country in the world, every industrialized or somewhat civilized country, shall we say, has got some type of police force to basically enforce laws, to protect the public and to stop everyone from going native. So to stop the,
exactly.
the stronger from taking advantage of the weaker. So what's the alternative? If we don't have cops, what are we going to do as a society to rein in the negative impulses and inclinations of much of our populace here, or a portion
of it? There is no other choice. You need the police. And I think, like I said, most people do appreciate them, especially law-abiding, hard-working people. Otherwise, you would have a jungle and the strong would survive. They would just, you would work and they take your money. They take your home. They take your car. You have to have the police, you know. There is no other answer. People, you know, you got to realize police do a job that, you know, it's not always a good job. They do a good job, but they have to tell you bad news.
Yeah.
You know, your interactions with the police aren't like celebratory,
yeah.
you know, they're telling you bad news, somebody in an accident, someone died, someone was killed. They have to give you summonses. They're forced to make an arrest. It's not like the fire department, say. The fire department is always the good guys. They got to go to a fire. They put the fire out and save lives. Police do that, too, but they have more interactions with people where the news and the things they got to do are in a negative light.
Yeah.
But it has to be done.
Yeah.
It takes a special kind of person to be a police officer.
It really does. It really does. So,
police officers see the underbelly of the city. They see people and meet them at their worst.
Yeah.
And they see some of the destructive nature people have and the things that people could do to other humans that you wouldn't believe are being done in a society that we live in.
That's for sure. You know, you think of cases, oftentimes the police are put up to things by the politicians that they don't want to be doing, like giving out traffic tickets, per se. Probably you don't want to be doing it. Or arresting people for selling untaxed cigarettes, like what happened to that guy in Staten Island. And things happen as a result of these forced interactions, and the police are held responsible. But really, it's the people making the rules, the politicians, the suits up there, who really are the cause of this a lot of the time.
Well, the politicians lead the direction, you know, because the mayor is basically the boss of the police department. But there are laws that are on the books that, you know, that sometimes you got to enforce them. And the thing with the untaxed cigarettes, you know, you got somebody who's breaking the law, first of all, selling untaxed cigarettes. But he's also doing it in front of stores that are licensed, pay insurance, pay rent, put their life savings on the line to have a store, and they're selling cigarettes. So there were a lot of complaints coming in on Eric Gardner, and he's just selling in front of their store.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so now you would expect the store owners, and they have every right to complain.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, if you're selling a product and you're paying rent, electricity, insurance, you bought the store, you buy stock, and then you have someone come just walk up who has no expenses and is selling cigarettes in front of your store.
Yeah.
I don't think that's right. I don't even think you need a politician to tell you that man had to be arrested. You know, and he took many arrests. He was warned many times.
Mm-hmm.
And he continued to do it. And on the day that he died, he resisted arrest.
Absolutely.
And he wasn't choked. I watched that video. I'm very up on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched that video a couple of dozen times. That wasn't a choke hold. It was a takedown hold. I've used it hundreds, literally hundreds of times. This was a 350-pound man or more.
Right.
Who did not? When you're placed under arrest, even if you feel it's wrong, you have many outlets after that. You could go to the complaint review board. You could go to an attorney. You could sue. You could get a summons. There's so much you could do.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't resist arrest. Police officer's doing a job. If you want to take it to court afterwards, you have all these rights to do that. But this is not like a dental appointment where you say, well, look, come back next week. I'm busy. Or I'm not going.
Sure.
You know, don't resist arrest. That's the word I got to put out there.
Yeah.
Police officer doesn't want to get hurt. He wants to go home at the end of his shift. He's just doing his job, you know. So don't resist arrest. You know, the police officer doesn't have a choice. He's making an arrest. All the choices are on the bad guy. He could fight the officer. He could run away. He could shoot at him. He could stab at him. He makes all those choices. And if he makes those choices, he's got to live with the results. Results.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I wasn't blaming the police for the Gardner situation.
No, I'm just explaining it to the audience. Police make an arrest. My advice is, if you don't want to get hurt or have a bad interaction, just surrender and go in peacefully, and they'll treat you with respect.
Of course.
I've had it both ways. When I had to make arrests, I dealt with violent felons. I tell them, well, you're under arrest. It's your choice. You want to go the hard way or the easy way, but you're going.
Yeah. Yep.
That you don't have a choice in. You want to make a choice on how you're going, standing or laying down. That's up to you.
Yep.
They have the choice. It's not in my hands. Now, if they make the wrong choice, they got to pay the price.
And rightfully so, because you guys are there to keep order. But there's a lot of, like, these revenue-raising measures that City Hall or the governor, whatever.
Well, I feel that's what's being done now, too. Yeah, they would rather see you write summonses than be proactive policing.
Right, right. And
the units I was in and the precincts that I worked in were very high crime rate, and it wasn't like that back then. You know, we went out there, your bosses, City Hall, politicians, they wanted proacting policing.
Right.
You know, they wanted you to go out there and get these bad guys off the street so decent people didn't have any problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they wanted, and they respected you, and they appreciated your work. Today, it's a different era.
Yeah.
It's a different world. It's a different ballgame. You know, it's just very hard to be a police officer today to do the right thing.
Very sad.
You're being micromanaged. You got cameras on you at all times. I feel, you know, people, the police got to think of what they're doing, how they're going to be perceived on video. You know, when these videos are doctored, they start and cut out when the person who's operating wants it to.
Yes,
you know, a guy
context.
Walks over, punches a cop in the face. It's not on video. The cop responds back, which is a natural reflex. That's on video.
Absolutely.
And it looks like he started it.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of deliberate deception that goes on. So you wrote the book, and then all of a sudden there's interest in a TV show. How did that come about?
Well, you know, once your name gets out there to the right people and you circulate it in certain circles, you know, and you're out there, so people saw it. What happened with my TV series was a producer was reading an article in the New York Post, actually, and they did a big spread on me a couple of years ago, and she thought it would be very interesting, and she took it to her bosses, and they all agreed, and they got in contact with me, and pretty quickly we came to an agreement, and it was Jupiter Entertainment. That was tied to the Discovery Channel, and my relationship with them is fantastic. As a matter of fact, two of the producers and the actor was at my house last night to view episode number 2.
Yeah, I watched it.
We had a great time.
I watched it. It was a great episode. I highly recommend that you check out the show. It was a great show. And, you know, you're one of, like, three really top-notch police shows on Discovery now. They've got, you probably watch them as well, Homicide Hunter and I Am Homicide, and now
they're
this show.
They're both put out by Jupiter, by the way.
Right, I figured that. I just felt they were the same style, kind of, in the same format. And they're all excellent shows. And you know what I love, Ralph, is the old pictures that they pop up.
Everybody's
saying
that. Yeah.
I love the old police cars. Remember the Plymouth Furies? And, you know,
I remember them well.
Yeah, and then the uniforms were so much different back then. At least they looked a lot different. I think, everything looked different, and you carried revolvers instead of automatics. I mean, it was just, like you said, a different time.
Very much a different time. I feel like a dinosaur now, you know. You know, that's what they call old cops, you know, dinosaurs. It's not a derogatory term. It's, you know, it's sort of like even a little respectful term, you know, but you're outdated. You know, technology took us over, you know.
Yeah, well, now they have DNA tests. I mean, in that case that you
were... You got cell phones,
yeah.
You got video, you got DNA, you got computers,
mm-hmm.
You got high-tech... bullet finders, you got
right.
High-tech communications. It's another world. I am a dinosaur.
Got it. Yeah, it's another world. I mean, could you imagine if you had any of that stuff when you were on the job, how much easier it would have been? You know, you're pounding the pavement.
Well, the one thing, if I had people who had cell phones back then, not the video, I wouldn't have survived video. But with cell phones, I think informants and would try to get, would be a lot easier. They would just call me and say, hey, there's a guy in the corner. He's wearing a blue shirt, blue jeans, and he's got a gun. But for an informant to get to me, he had to go through the precinct. The precinct had to find me. It was a whole procedure, and it took a lot of time, you know?
Yeah, communication.
You know, see, some aspects would help us and some would hurt us.
I think
videos is, I think that's the biggest downfall for law enforcement. And besides policies, like, you know, how they cut out. Or cut down tremendously, like 98% of stop and frisk.
Right.
You know, stop and frisk is a very, very strong tool of law enforcement, which is definitely needed. If people don't feel they're going to be searched or frisked, it all, like, empowers them to carry weapons. And what's going to happen if you carry a weapon? Obviously, sooner or later, you're going to use it.
Yeah.
Either shoot somebody or intimidate somebody. You're going to rob, shoot, injure, kill people. You know?
Absolutely.
You have to feel that the police are going to check on individuals. If they get it. Back in my day, if we had a gut feeling or a hunch, mm-hmm. and you caught a guy with a gun, that's considered great police work. Today, they consider it, you know, I violated someone's rights and everybody wants to sue you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big difference.
Big difference. Well, anyway, Ralph, it's been great having you on the show. We find your book, Street Warrior, on Amazon. I'm looking at the ad for it right there. It's also available in Kindle. Hopefully you'll do an audiobook soon. It'd be great to hear you read the book and hear it in your own voice. Talk to them about that. And hey, like I said, got a question for Ralph for myself. Email me, kl@carrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's at Carrie Lutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Ralph, thanks so much for coming on, and best of luck on the book and the show.
Thank you very much.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.